Vaughn Edelson, Assistant Director of Health Communications at Genetic Alliance. Vaughn focuses on communicating health and genetics topics to diverse audiences. Vaughn oversees Genetic Alliance's Family Health History Initiatives, manages the writing and editing processes, coordinates Genetic Alliance's integration of science and the arts, and chairs the in-office health club. Her passion for health extends to fitness. She's also a fitness instructor and personal trainer. She earned a BA in biology from Brown University. Welcome.
Thanks, everyone, for sticking around. It's a perfect day to be here for a Family Health History session because tomorrow, November 1st, kicks off Family Health History Month. As Monica was mentioning, the thematic topics for newsletters, so Thanksgiving's coming up, Family History Day. And I'm going to be talking about our project to incorporate better family health history collection and use of family health history information in federally funded health centers. So I have to thank Tess, relationships to disclose, for doing a lot of my introduction for me. One of the tools she mentioned was a tool that was created for the Community-Centered Family Health History Project several years ago, and I have a bunch of copies of the toolkit up front if anyone is interested in taking them home. That project was from 2006 to 2009, and it was really based on the non-medical model. I think there's some stigma around the word genetics, a lot of stigma around health conversations. How do we take this, do a non-medical model, and focus really on the community and on the family? So we had more than 20 different community partners, wide range of partners, community as self-defined. So you as an individual are the person who decides what communities you're a part of, with the idea that those are the people you'll have the most trust in to want to share this information. So all of the partners customized the toolkit, integrated it into their communities, and we did find, we worked with seven communities in particular on the evaluation. They each recruited 25 families of up to three blood relatives, got the toolkit, talked about it for a while. We followed up 3 months later, and actually, that was a positive outcome. They did talk about it over that three-month period. We found that the toolkit increased conversations about health within the family, what people were seeing, hearing, reading about family health history. What we did not find was an increase in conversations with a healthcare provider. And there are, I'm sure, tons of reasons that could be. We were working with several different minority populations who had different issues with trust with the medical establishment. But what we concluded was a big factor was that the project was only 3 months long. In any given three-month period, especially if you're healthy, you're not necessarily going to be seeing your doctor in that time. So a natural next step, both for us and for HRSA, our funding agency, was to test this out in the clinical setting. So that's the project that I'm going to be talking about today. So our main goal was to create and sustain family health history awareness and discussion in the healthcare setting, particularly among health center providers and staff. Our national evaluation was looking at the provider and staff level, but each of our partners did their own local evaluations. A lot of them focused on patients and sometimes community members as well. A bunch of different objectives about increasing these conversations about family health history that are happening in the clinic and trying to see if the providers and the staff can use those more in their risk assessment and referrals to genetic services. So this is the toolkit. It's available at familyhealthhistory.org. Tess mentioned that they customized it for their groups, their community. Anyone can do that. You could go do it for yourself. You could put in your dad's story, your grandpa's story, or you can do it for your organization and community. And actually, one great point about not writing it down is that we got that feedback from the centers at the end of the project saying this is a great booklet, people were interested in the content, but it would be so much better if there were a place in the booklet to actually write things down. Then people would be less likely to just toss it after they hopefully read it and more likely to keep it as kind of a living document. We all know family health history is not static. It evolves. So these ones that are here don't have it, but the next batch we printed does have extra pages for people to try and write their own health portrait or just take notes as they're asking the questions. So that was really good feedback for us on the value of the toolkit. Our project timeline, hopefully people can see, we started 2 years ago this month, and we just wrapped up. We did a needs assessment to start off the project, a literature search, and then stakeholder interviews with all different people in community health centers, the providers and staff, as well as the community board members, health educators, genetic counselors, doctors, nurses, MAs, kind of across the board, to see what they had been doing around family health history, how that collection was currently being done, their satisfaction with the collection, recommendations for us, for our project. They did recommend that we do a request for applications process to get a diversity of centers that really have the capacity to do this and would prioritize the project. So we had that open for a few months. We got a lot of interest, I think about 50 applications. And then the project period itself was from May 2011 to July 2012. And it started with an on-site training, myself and one of the evaluators. I went to each site. That training was 2 to 3 hours long. It was based on a presentation developed by the National Coalition for Health Professional Education in Genetics. And so we adapted it with information about our toolkit, about family health history in particular, but it went over genetic red flags, how to do risk assessment based on family history, and how to collect it. There was a pre and post survey after the training that was the start of our national evaluation. Then each of the sites customized and disseminated the toolkit, and we had an event bringing everyone together at the end. And then we just finished up. So the requirements for the health centers, they had to participate on our advisory committee, customize and disseminate the toolkit, participate in the national evaluation, as well as conduct their own local evaluation. But other than that, we really left it open. We didn't say, you know, you have to be collecting it this way, and it has to go to this number of patients. We wanted that diversity, so we had one site, get to those that had you know, maybe only a few hundred patients versus sites that have several, many tens of thousands. We wanted that diversity in terms of geography, in terms of patient population seen, and in terms of approach. One of our objectives was to be able to compare the implementation strategies and see what works, and so we really had a diversity of strategies. So, if everyone's awake and knows their geography this morning, we had 6 partner sites, Beaumont Cancer Genetics Program and Covenant Community Care. They were the only site that we worked with that had an existing relationship with a genetics provider, and that turned out to be very valuable for them. They're in Michigan, and their approach was to disseminate the toolkit to all new and returning patients at the clinic, as well as in some of their outreach activities, and they were specifically focused on the genetic basis of cancer. So it was the medical geneticist and the genetic counselor from Beaumont who were the project leads, working in conjunction with the medical director, who was a physician and a nurse at the health center. Comprehensive Community Health Centers is in LA. They customized the toolkit in English and Spanish and started dissemination at annual physicals, but the health education sessions turned out to be their biggest mode of dissemination. One of the recommendations or just, I guess, notes from the needs assessment interviews beforehand was that a lot of sites might be interested in pilot testing at one of their clinics and then later expanding to more. And we found that with a couple of the groups that we worked with that had more than one site, that they did pilot at one clinic which had already implemented the EMR and then were planning to disseminate at the rest of their sites once they got their EMR on board up and running. And the health educators were really the leaders of the program there. Daily Planet was a healthcare for the homeless center in Richmond, Virginia. And so they disseminated the toolkit at the clinic sites, but they also have a lot of outreach events that they do weekly at different shelters and other areas in Richmond, and they had a lot of success there with their nursing and health education student interns. So those people would go out into the community, really go one-on-one with the people to collect their family health history, go through the toolkit with them. And we were able to connect them with the genetics department at VCU, which gave them just a whole new crop of interns to work with, but as well as kind of regular communication with those providers and to be able to get some of their patients seen. They're kind of our case study that we highlight. One of the health educators saw a man in one of the shelters at an outreach event, started talking about his family health history of cancer. She then referred him to the clinic, said, you know, come in, be seen by one of our physicians. who once, upon hearing all of that family health history of cancer, actually then referred him for colonoscopy, and he had cancer, immediately went into surgery, and so that was a really powerful example for us of how this can work. It's pretty exciting. Our other three sites were in Hawaii. That was a really bad site visit, I'll tell you. They actually customized in English as well as two Filipino dialects, and they're very small site. Only 3,000 people live on that island altogether. They call it not just rural medicine, but frontier medicine. So it was a very kind of different center and environment in which they were working, but they were another one where, because they were so small, they really are able to go one-on-one with the patients. And they had their medical assistant go through the toolkit, but also walk people through My Family Health Portrait, which was another note for us when people said they like both. These tools can really work together. That was our idea in creating the booklets in the first place, is that really it's not supposed to be one or the other. They complement each other. My Family Health Portrait is a venue for you to plug in, you know, my dad had this, my aunt had this, but our tool gives more the how and why. Why should I do this in the first place? How do I go about getting that information to then put it into My Family Health Portrait? Madison County Community Health Centers is in Indiana, and Siouxland Community Health Center is in Iowa. They both customized in English and Spanish, and Madison now includes a family health history discussion at every new patient orientation. It was their health educator who was really the champion of this project and now does that with every single new patient. So our evaluation, we had 3 points in time, or baseline, which is actually both a pre- and the post-training survey, mid-project and end-of-project. We used online surveys for the mid- and end-project and telephone interviews with key project staff. So our results. Effects on provider, staff, family health history practices. These are all self-reported, mostly through the interviews, some from the survey. But we had a lot of positive outcomes, which was great. They increased the comprehensiveness of the family health history taken. So they were adding on age of death, date of onset of disease, and more generations than had been previously taken. And I guess the third bullet, the number of patient charts, went up. That wasn't, not all sites did a chart audit. That kind of local evaluation was up to them. But one, it was Madison in Indiana. When they applied for the project, they had said, less than 50% of our patient charts have anything in there for family health history. So that was one of their big goals, was to bump up that number. They wanted 75% of patient charts by the end of the project to have something for family history. So they achieved that, which was great. And then, you know, then from there can build on in terms of comprehensiveness and then what they actually do with that information, which is obviously the important part. But we did see some more referrals both internally to health education classes as well as externally to other specialists. So these, all of our evaluation questions were taken from the training content and learning objectives. So we have the pre-training, post, mid, and end. And basically, from the pre-training to through all the other data collection points, everything increased. And I think what's striking to me is that those increases stayed through the end of the project. And that was despite high turnover. I was not familiar with health centers before we got started, and there was a lot of turnover in all the staff as well as the providers at all of our centers. In Iowa, the case managers were really the ones carrying the project, and at one point in the project, they were down 2 case managers. So, you know, there's a lot of other priorities, and clearly just getting through all the patients and through all the work was one. But despite that, the increases remained, and I think that was due to a lot of continued trainings. We wanted to do our initial training as a train-the-trainers model. It wasn't just we come in, give you this information, and get out. We gave them the presentation. There was also a recorded webinar, so they could just have their new staff look at that. And the confidence levels increased in a lot of these family history skills. One of note here is that the belief in the importance of family health history was already very high, so that was good. The providers and staff already thought that it was important, and it was just kind of getting them to work on the collection and interpretation. And so here, the only ones really where now we see the end of project results kind of dip were these skills around the collection. They had down, but it was more kind of the interpretation side, so locating and then making the referrals to other specialists, dip towards the end of the project. And I think this is where it comes in, where that the Michigan site that already had the existing relationship with genetics and Daily Planet, where we were able to hook them up with the VCU genetics department, was really important to have the repeated kind of in-service trainings for the providers and staff to kind of, you know, keep everything fresh. Quickly, effect on patients, a lot of positive outcomes, you know, disseminated this information to 5,000 plus patients over the six communities, and anecdotally, so this is really all from, or a lot from the provider interviews and some from some patient surveys, that they had a greater understanding of the link between family health history and health. We're providing more detailed family histories and just having more discussion about it with providers. But of course, there were always going to be some people who don't want to do it. The privacy issues, fetalism, lack of access to relatives, which we've talked about today, and barriers. At Iowa, they had a really high rate, no-show rate, and they said transportation was a huge issue. So just getting people in can be hard sometimes. A few of the methods that people use to try and overcome these barriers, incentives. It's always a good one. Bus tickets were big in Richmond with the homeless center. Otherwise, $5, $10 gift cards. And for some of the older generations who they found some barriers and didn't want to talk about it, they didn't care when you said this is for your children, but when they said this is for your grandchildren, that's when people started to pay attention, so that was cute. So finally, organizational level, just having a project champion at every level of staff was really important. So it can't just be the one provider, it can't just be the one medical assistant. You need that project champion, the provider champion, the nurse champion, the MA champion. So it can be challenging to implement these things, but with a lot of competing priorities, you really need a few people there to drive it. And the buy-in was just really important. So overall, a lot of conclusions. We're trying to implement a new practice, but with a lot of competing priorities, we knew there would be challenges, but overall, we found that it really is doable. It complemented really well a lot of the centers that were becoming or going through the process to become a patient-centered medical home, and so having this emphasis on prevention, on continued conversations really complemented that well. And so while we didn't have the time to look at patient outcomes, that is definitely our next step. So we got the work on the collection, and from there, the interpretation and what to actually do with the information, which is, you know, always the million-dollar question. So thank you. Oh, I have a lot of acknowledgments. It's funded by HRSA, the evaluators, our NAC, and the health center partners, and then leave you with that from our culminating.
So, two questions.
Okay. Please take
all
the
mic. Right. If all the speakers want to come.
Oh, you.
Yeah, so at the basics, in terms of the booklets, a lot of them printed way more than they knew they'd be able to give out in the year. So at least for the next year or two, yeah, until the printing costs kick in, they will be able to continue exactly as they have with the new patient orientations and the health education classes in particular. I think those models are really the ones that we'll be able to see the best sustainability, because even, you know, if they can print it on paper, even if they don't have the toolkit, having that person be really excited to have the family health history as part of every new patient orientation, or to be able to tie it into the diabetes and smoking cessation class, health education classes, will make it able to be a lot more integrated, perhaps than some of the ones that did have more of the burden on the, not the burden, it's their job anyway, but, you know, trying to emphasize something new for the providers. So we have seen, you know, it's only been a few months, but there was a lot of energy coming off of the culminating event that was in June to really continue the work, not only continue what they've been doing in their own centers, but looking even as a group of six or fewer centers working together to look for more funding to continue the work. So there's high energy, and we'll see how long that lasts.